You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
For over three decades, Richard Clark read government reports marked top secret and for your eyes only. He served Presidents Reagan and George H.W. Bush and was a counterterrorism advisor to Presidents Clinton and George W. Bush. He became the first head of cybersecurity in 2001, where he organized efforts to protect our nation's computer system. And as I'm sure you remember, he publicly resigned from the Bush administration in 2003 and published Against All Enemies, a memoir of his government service that included sharp criticism of the Bush administration's counterterrorism strategies before and after 9/11. He's now warning of another potential attack, which can be launched from anywhere, even a cubicle. His new book, Cyber War, The Next Threat to National Security and What to Do About It, is published by Echo. And I'm very pleased that Richard Clark joins us once again on the show. Welcome back.
Yeah, it's good to be back with you.
The Internet turned 40 last August. How much is it expanding every day?
Well, part of the problem is we don't know how many people are connected and how many things are connected. It's not just our own laptops and cell phones anymore. Machines are connected. It's not just humans that are on the Internet. Your photocopier is probably on the Internet. Your elevator in your building is probably connected to the Internet. Machines are connected to have sort of diagnosis, and they phone home back to their manufacturer when they need a repairman. You don't have to ask. The result of which is, however, that your photocopier is on the Internet, and you may not know that, and someone can hack into your photocopier and see everything you photocopy.
You suggest here that part of the problem is that we have one Internet that covers everything. Should we have a number of different Internets?
Well, it turns out that, surprisingly to me, this is a big ideological issue and a big debate. Many of the founders of the Internet, including friends of mine like Vint Cerf, who's a famous founder of the Internet, take great offense when I say we need to break the Internet down into trusted networks, open networks, control networks. For example, I don't think the electric power grid, the control system for the electric power grid, ought to be in any way connected to the Internet. And yet it is. Now, Con Ed will tell you it's not. But time after time, when experiments have been conducted by the government to see if they could get from the public Internet to the control system for power grids, they've been able to do it.
Is that what makes it so attractive to criminals?
Criminals and governments. Increasingly, this is a problem of governments. I think criminals have been on the Internet in one way or another for a long time. But now what we're seeing is nation states engaging in huge, large-scale industrial espionage.
And yesterday, there was a front-page headline in the New York Times that read, "Hackers said to breach Google password system." Some people think that the attack was made by the Chinese government.
No, I think it was, too. And well, in that article, the Google spokesperson says, well, at least we're being upfront about it and we're being transparent, and other companies aren't. And that's right. Google is hardly the only company that's been hacked by the Chinese. Every large company has been hacked by the Chinese.
And why is that the Chinese are our friends? So I could understand North Korea or Iran or some other rogue nation wanting to do this sort of thing. But China's a friend of ours, isn't it?
It's a friend of ours up to a point. It's an economic competitor. And therefore, it wants to get our corporate secrets. It wants to take the R&D, the research and development that we've paid for in private corporations and in the government, and get it for free.
Is this government policy, or is this what private individuals are doing with the Chinese government looking the other way, perhaps?
In China, the Chinese government has to authorize anything like this. And so some of it is being done by the Chinese military. Some of it's being done by criminal cartels in China, but clearly with government permission.
And do we know this for sure? Isn't one of the main problems that these kinds of attacks are easily camouflaged?
They're easily spoofed, you're right. In the case of some of the Chinese attacks, however, I'm informed by people I trust in this business that they were able to verify with high certainty that it actually was the Chinese government.
Well, how do we go about catching cyber criminals and government hackers?
Well, getting criminals requires the cooperation of other governments. And places like Russia aren't cooperating. Places like Russia seem to be doing the following. The government is saying to the hackers, you go off and hack. We'll protect you when the Americans or the British issue an arrest warrant for you. We won't do anything about it. We won't help them investigate. And we need something in return. When we ask you for a favor, you know, like the Godfather, when we ask you for a favor, you'll help us out. And they have. They helped the Russian government out in attacking Estonia and in attacking Georgia.
Now, what are the Russian hackers looking for when they attack us?
Money. The Russian hackers seem to be focused on credit cards, bank accounts, and they've made a lot of money. We're talking in the billions of dollars.
In an odd way, isn't this a repeat of the Cold War? We're talking about Russia and China as being engaged in some kind of war against the United States.
It's odd, isn't it? But
and I'm assuming the United States does something similar.
We do, with one big distinction. I think the United States probably hacks its way into everything in Russia and China, but we don't take corporate secrets and then turn around and give them to American companies. Now, some people don't believe that. I know there's a big conspiracy theory that the NSA actually is stealing information from Airbus and giving it to Boeing. That really doesn't happen.
Is our officials more concerned with building up our internet barriers and finding ways of protecting them than finding these attackers?
I wish the government were interested in defending our cyberspace. Because this has become a sort of political issue about regulating cyberspace, Verizon, for example, just won a big suit in federal court. Verizon wanted to establish the fact that the government couldn't regulate the internet, and they won. So right now the government can't regulate the internet under that court ruling. So the government, because of political pressures and lobbyists, is refusing to do some of the things necessary to issue the regulations necessary to make cyberspace more secure.
Have there been cyber attacks against the United States that have been foiled? That we know of?
Well, foiled in the sense that there are people who try to get into some of our networks and aren't skilled enough to do that. Yes.
Well, we know that Google was attacked. Has Google been able to prevent the hackers from getting the information they were looking for?
No, I don't think so. But, you know, one of the interesting things about stealing information in cyberspace as compared to stealing anything in virtual space, if you come to work in the morning and someone has stolen things from your office, you know it. If you come to work in the morning and someone has copied and therefore stolen things from your hard drive, you don't know it.
Until they do something where they're using that information.
Right. So, for example, if suddenly, as you're about to turn out your new product or a clone of it appears on a market in Thailand or Taiwan, you can probably guess that a hack occurred 6 months ago.
Is the U.S. government protecting companies like Google?
No. It's interesting. The U.S. government philosophy, even under Obama, is that the government will defend the government, but the private sector is on its own. So all of the things that would be attacked in a cyber war, all the things that are being attacked every day in cyber espionage, the government will do nothing to protect.
My guest is Richard A. Clark, who's written with the help of Robert K. Nake, is it?
Knake,
K-N-A-K-E. Cyber war, the next threat to national security and what to do about it. Is this sort of thing that you have to be really sophisticated to pull off, or can a teenager who's sitting in front of a computer long enough figure out how to hack into something?
So we had an incident when I was in the White House when Bill Clinton was president, and he was getting ready to threaten Iraq because they weren't complying with the UN. And we began sending troops over, airplanes over to Iraq. And as we began doing that, the U.S. Air Force air bases were hacked successfully by somebody. And our first assumption was, this is the Iraqis. Well, it turned out it was a teenager. It was a 14-year-old in Tel Aviv. And two
just of, having fun?
Yeah, and exactly, and two of his friends in San Francisco. But it does require sophisticated operations to take down something like a power grid. And teenagers are not going to be able to do that.
Still, it would suggest that if teenagers are doing this and a lot of other people are doing it and very sophisticated people are doing it, we're seeing a lot of attacks every day.
Oh, we're seeing many, many attacks every day around the world. But I think we really do need to distinguish between the kind of things that we see teenagers doing or it doesn't matter your age, but the individual or the small group of people doing. There's a term that is used in the business called script kiddie, where you can go on the internet and you can download an attack program.
Really?
Yeah. So
that sounds like a lot of fun.
People who do it's illegal. People who do that are script kiddies, and they can get into a lot of sites that aren't well protected, but it requires special tricks that only governments appear to know to get into some of the well defended sites.
And nearly a year ago, President Obama announced that he was creating a cyber czar, and Howard Schmidt took that post just this past December to oversee the nation's computer networks. Has that been a big enough step in the right direction as far as you're concerned?
Well, it was unfortunate it took that long to get a cyber czar, and Howard's a very experienced fellow in this business. We haven't yet seen any Obama initiative in cybersecurity. He's still trying to play out the programs left by George Bush, which concentrate, frankly, on defending the Pentagon and the government.
So if somebody wants to hack into my email, the government isn't doing anything to protect me.
That's absolutely right. And if somebody's trying
But it's a federal offense for somebody to open my mail.
Well, it's a federal offense for someone to hack into your computer as well, but the government won't do anything about it.
So there's this thing called Cyber Command. What is that?
So it's very interesting. Last October 1st, it was very little noticed in the media, the U.S. military created something called Cyber Command, run by a four-star general. And it has two components, a Navy component called the 10th Fleet, which has no ships, and an Air Force component called the 24th Air Force, which has no airplanes. And the fleet and the Air Force engage in combat in cyberspace. They and other organizations all report up to this four-star general who's in charge of Cyber Command. Other nations have it, too. We had testimony from a CIA expert recently that between 20 and 30 nations have cyber commands.
I have to take a little break, but one of the reasons it's been pointed out that we never had nuclear war was the concept of mutually assured destruction. And is this, and we'll get into that a bit more, but is this our attempt to come up with something that's the equivalent?
No, and unfortunately, mutually assured destruction doesn't work in cyber war.
My guest is Richard A. Clark, who has written with Robert K. Kanaki, Cyber War, The Next Threat to National Security and What to Do About It. It is published by Echo. We will continue our conversation after this. We're back with Richard A. Clark, who served in the White House for Presidents Reagan, George H.W. Bush, George W. Bush, Bill Clinton. He teaches at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government, and he has written a new book called Cyber War, The Next Threat to National Security and What to Do About It. It is published by Echo. So you said that we can't have mutually assured destruction in this area. Why not? Yeah. After all, if they go after our computers, can't we have something that then goes after their computers?
So let me back up. Mutually assured destruction was part of a military strategy that was evolved during the nuclear Cold War. We don't have a military strategy that's evolved for cyberspace. You'd like to think that maybe there's a secret one at least that the government has, but I'm pretty confident it doesn't. And one of the things that Rob Kanaki and I are saying in the book is we need a strategy for cyber war about what we can do, what we shouldn't do, where are the limits. And that strategy ought to be publicly discussed. So the first question is, in developing such a strategy, can nuclear strategy just port over? And nuclear strategy involved mutually assured destruction. Don't hit me, because even if you hit me, I'll hit you worse. And that doesn't work too well in cyberspace, because you can never really know who hit you, at least not quickly.
Mm-hmm. We would see where the missiles were coming from.
Right. And we would know how many missiles they had and how effective they were. You know, there were over 2,000 nuclear weapons blown up in tests so that people saw the effect of nuclear weapons. You don't really know what the effect of a cyber attack is going to be. how good the other guy is, how good your defenses are.
So what would happen if the U.S. computer system, I'm talking about the government at this point, but it could be anything, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it would be just as destructive if they only went after civilian computers.
More.
What would happen if it was attacked tomorrow?
So the former head of U.S. intelligence, Mike McConnell, said 2 years ago that he thought it was possible for a foreign enemy to hack into the New York financial system, the banks and all of the stock market and all the associated things here.
He obviously wasn't thinking about Goldman Sachs. And
he was indeed. He was indeed. Even though they spend a lot of money on cyber defense,
mm-hmm.
He said that it was his assessment that all of those systems could be hacked into and financial calamity could occur because records could be destroyed and you wouldn't know who owned what. And it would take a long time to restore the financial system. That's unlikely to happen because everybody's invested in the global financial system, and therefore, with the possible exception of North Korea, maybe Iran, no one would want to do that because they'd be hurting themselves. Let's take the case of Iran. We're trying to get sanctions at the UN on Iran to stop them from building a nuclear weapon. What if we do? What if we enforce those sanctions? What if our Navy ships intercept boats going to Iran and whatnot? Iran's going to respond in some way. In the future, we have to worry about nations responding not just with truck bombs and conventional means, but also with cyber attacks. So what if in that scenario, Iran decided, let's take down the East Coast power grid. Let's cause a cascading series of failures, and let's actually blow up some generators and melt some high-tension lines using cyber attack.
And you say that we wouldn't even know where it was coming from for a while, or perhaps ever.
We certainly wouldn't be able to say with 100% confidence for a while and perhaps ever.
So it does that, and we obviously can't retaliate because we don't know who's done it. What do we do at that point? I guess the only answer is what we've been doing, which is to try to put up as many firewalls as possible.
Now, one thing we could do is to limit it. You know, Obama had this great success recently on reducing nuclear weapons. What if we start talking about reducing cyber weapons? I know it's difficult and it raises verification problems and all of that, but it's about time now that we have cyber war and cyber command, that we start thinking about cyber peace and cyber arms control.
How do you do that?
Well, we have
if anybody can, at a personal computer, can do some sophisticated hacking, how do we wind up doing something like that?
Well, we have some ideas in the book about how to do it. One idea is that you have an international center where a nation can call in and say, I'm being hacked, and I think I'm being hacked from country B. And the center, therefore, calls country B and gives them the information and says, it looks like some computer in your country over here in Brooklyn is attacking another country. Please go do something about it. So when the attacks took place that we discuss in the book on Estonia that were probably Russian in origin, they looked like they were coming from Brooklyn.
Because you could reroute and reroute and reroute.
Exactly, and because, in fact, they had taken over a machine in Brooklyn.
Hmm. So there are no real fingerprints here.
There are, but they're hard to do in real time.
And we're sure that the Russians were doing that to Estonia only because of what was achieved?
A, motivation. B, the Russians pretty much admitted it. And C, eventually NATO was able to trace back and do some forensics, and they were very confident it came from Russia.
Now, you said earlier that there's a lot of resistance to the idea of having a group of internets. But if this is such a serious problem, doesn't that override the concerns of people who have a certain, very nicely idealistic view of what the internet should do and should be?
Well, you would think so. But, you know, the other factor that's at play here is that to really secure cyberspace, the government has to get involved, and the government has to do regulation. And particularly Republicans and industry trade groups and lobbyists who spend a lot of money and political influence in Washington have created an atmosphere down there where it's almost impossible to get any new regulation. And they have a knee-jerk negative reaction when you say regulation. So when
but how about saying 9/11?
Well,
on the internet in this case.
Yeah. No, exactly right. I think their federal government regulation is not ipso facto a bad thing. There are some regulations that are stupid. There are some regulations that are onerous. But I like some regulations. You know, we don't like our children licking lead paint off Chinese toys. And the federal government kind of fell asleep there for a while in the Bush administration on doing the regulations that already existed. But you're not going to be able to solve the problem of cybersecurity in this country without some regulations. We have to make sure the government doesn't get too involved so it doesn't invade our privacy. But on the other hand, they do have to get companies like the internet service providers, the big ISPs, to start cleaning up the internet.
You mentioned the possibility of bringing down the power grid. What about New York City's subways? Are they on the cyber protection list? I was thinking about the recently foiled terror plot arrest of Najib Al-Azizi.
Well, I don't know in particular about New York, but I'll tell you, the Washington D.C. subway system, the San Francisco subway system, and a few others in this country have digital control systems. And in fact, Washington had a major crash last year and went after that crash, shut off the digital control systems and went back to manual. Anything that has a digital control system can be hacked and can be taken over.
My guest is Richard A. Clarke. His latest book is Cyber War, The Next Threat to National Security and What to Do About It, published by Echo. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Barack Obama is the first president to have and keep a BlackBerry. I know you have one. I'm sure it takes more than just a simple password to get in, but if you can hack into the nation's power grid, into the Washington train system, it can't be all that hard to hack into a cell phone.
No, it's not hard at all, especially an iPhone.
So is it a good idea for the president to have a BlackBerry or an iPhone?
No, it's a very bad idea. And he's the Secret Service and other people have been trying to persuade him to get rid of it. The compromise they made was that he got one that apparently is more secure. But nonetheless, he has one. And, you know, when you have a cell phone or a BlackBerry and you turn it on, it's transmitting every few seconds your location. So if nothing else, the president is walking around with a geolocator.
So people could know all the time whether he's in this room or that room, let alone whether he's in Washington or at Camp David.
That's at least theoretically possible.
What kind of advice can you offer a private citizen about how to protect himself online from a prospective hacker? Well, first of all, I'm assuming that no hacker cares about me.
No, I don't think that's right, because what happens is hackers don't care that it's you so much. They care that you have a computer. And what they do is they get into literally hundreds of thousands of computers, and then they have them all operating as a virtual computer together. You don't even know that your computer's been compromised. It may be a little slow running.
That's the reason.
It could be. And in fact, what happened was you went to an innocent website, and when you were looking at that website had been compromised. They didn't know it. And when you go to that website, it downloads a little program into your computer, and that little program phones home to somebody in Russia or China or the United States. And now your computer is part of a zombie network. So that you can have 100,000 computers all doing something like trying to hack into a bank.
So they could use my computer as part of a process of hacking into a bank, and I have no idea that this is going on.
This happens all the time.
Will the next big war be fought from behind a computer desk, do you think?
There are Air Force generals in the United States who have said that publicly. I think one of two things is going to happen. Either any war the United States is involved in the future with a moderately sophisticated country, we will use cyber. I think that as part of the war. I think there's also at least the possibility that a cyber war could be just cyber. And we talk about scenarios for that in the book, both. scenarios where a conventional war has a cyber component to it and a standalone cyber war.
I would assume that something like that happened during the first Gulf War.
The first Gulf War, there was the option for the United States to use cyber, and General Schwarzkopf decided not to do it.
We could have just paralyzed Iraq?
Schwarzkopf was told that we could shut off the air defense system of Iraq in 1990, and he decided that wasn't reliable enough, and he may have been right in 1990. But in the future, the United States will definitely use it if you're going after a country that has a network. I asked in 2001 when we invaded Afghanistan, could we have a cyber attack on Afghanistan? The answer was there's nothing to attack in cyberspace in Afghanistan.
You are no longer privy to top secret documents.
That's right.
Are people still telling you stuff?
You might assume that I couldn't possibly comment.
Are they fully? Obviously, you're aware of a major problem in the making, and I'm sure that people in government are as well. And yet, I get the feeling from our discussion that nobody seems to know what to do.
Well, the government is doing some things to protect the military and some things to protect the federal government. But for political and somewhat ideological reasons, they're unwilling to say that they're going to step out and defend the whole country. America has these odd ideas about boundaries in these areas that other countries don't have. China is going to defend Chinese cyberspace, full stop. Russia is going to do it as well.
But they already are involved in all sorts of censorship, so it'd probably be a lot easier for them.
That's right. And you don't have to do censorship to defend cyberspace, but you're absolutely right. China has sort of architected its networks so that they can control the networks. And they can defend those networks. So we have a very good offensive capability. We have almost no defensive capability. And if you net the two together, if you sum up our offensive capability and our defensive capability, overall, we don't compare very well to other countries.
So if I were a country that decided that it was time to go to war with the United States, although I can't imagine anybody wanting to do that, you're suggesting that it's totally possible for them to not only do it, but without putting any troops on the ground, paralyzing the United States, perhaps even defeating us in some way.
I think the United States could lose the first cyber war. Now, nations are not going to attack us just because they have cyber weapons, but if a war occurred for another reason and they have cyber weapons, they could do a lot of damage to us. And we could lose the first cyber war.
On the other hand, I do understand why there is a certain reluctance to get more involved in the Internet. We object to the Chinese censoring the Internet, and there was the Google war, and perhaps that's one of the reasons that they are accused of hacking into Google.
I'm sure it is.
It's a war against the company that embarrassed them.
So we do not want the government running the Internet. We do not want the government involved in privacy invasion any more than it was under the Bush administration. We want to push that back and reestablish our privacy rights and our constitutional rights. But there has to be a happy medium where we preserve our rights and we keep the government at bay from invading our privacy and our civil liberties. But we also defend our cyberspace so that we don't have a disaster.
Do you have a sense that Google has plugged up the holes?
Google has done a great deal.
But they're more sophisticated probably than most of the people in the government.
Well, it's interesting. Google called the National Security Agency after it happened. And in an exception to normal policy, NSA said, okay, we'll help you.
There's a case before the Supreme Court in which a policeman's messages that he sent over equipment he was given by the police department were read by the police department. And there's a whole privacy issue here. Are we guaranteed any kind of privacy on the Internet if we're using our own equipment?
I'm not a lawyer, and I think the answer to that is yes, there are some gray areas. Most law, I think, says if you're using a company or a government agency's computer system, they have the right to monitor the activity on their own network. So if a policeman is using a police department's network and is sending around racist remarks in emails, the police department probably does have a legitimate reason and a legal reason for monitoring his emails.
So we should just be careful about sending out anything that we might think is embarrassing from a computer that is supplied by our employer.
Well, I think we should be very careful about anything we do in email because it never dies. It keeps coming back to life in court cases. And it's amazing how easy it is for other people to get our emails sometimes.
I read that one of the problems for China is that even though they are engaged in all of this hacking, they are not yet sophisticated enough, the hackers in China, to wreak real damage.
Oh, no, I think they're very sophisticated. The difference between China and, let's say, the United States or Russia is that China frequently does it in a way that makes noise and leaves breadcrumbs, and you can follow the breadcrumbs back. I think when the United States does it and when Russia does it, you don't know it's happened.
Richard A. Clark's latest book, his follow-up to Against All Enemies, is Cyber War, the Next Threat to National Security and What to Do About It. It's written with the help of Robert K. Knocke and published by Echo. And I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
It's great to be back.